seagull. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. And it's episode 440 to be broadcast Wednesday, May 7th, 2025 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who's off doing Dr. Fran Storch things today. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. I might be able to respond, but if not, just leave a comment down here below. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle advocacy, bicycle culture, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar, upcoming news in cycling, you name it, we talk about it. Have it has anything to do with the bicycle. If you have a comment, you want to contribute information to the show and you're listening, you can just comment right down here below, or you can drop me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. tariffs. Yeah, it's all about the tariffs. Too many tariffs. What the heck's going on here? So People for Bikes is actually preparing a letter that they're sending out to the current adolescent in charge in public housing in Washington, D.C. about the tariffs. So we will review that a little bit more into the show, but I'm getting real sick of it. You know, I mean, what you have to do to be adored in this country if you're residing in the White House, I do not get it. But anyway, certainly shouldn't come at attacking people who ride bicycles. And how do you attack people that ride bicycles? Well, there's a number of different ways. You can either run them over with your car, which is not a good idea, or you can just make them pay extra money for things that we do not make here in this country. We don't make bikes here. We really don't. We do, but they're all high-end, custom-built, you know, that whole thing. So, you know, to be able to cut back on the supply of bicycles that are necessary for many people to be able to use their bikes to commute with and all, just makes no sense to me. That's my rant. I'll move on from there. We'll cover a little bit more of that later on. On a positive side, So the positive side is that I went to the Energy Fair Electric Car and Bike Show in Hampton this weekend. That was kind of cool. They had a number of people there with electric cars. There was an e-bike floating around, but I didn't really see much of it. And apparently I was there to answer questions for anybody who walked in who wanted to know more about e-bikes and what they're all about. So I did speak with a few people about that, explained it to them, how it all worked. There are a number of people that had said to me, well, you know, I pretty much gave up on the bike riding thing because, you know, it's just, I can't get up the hills anymore. And it's like, no, that's not the answer. The answer is you still can get up the hills because e-bikes make a huge difference. So anyway, I explained a lot of that to people. I went there with a lot of information. Unfortunately, there weren't as many people there that were interested in that as I had hoped to see, but it was kind of nice to see that the small town of Hampton, Connecticut was paying attention to this sort of thing. They also had some people there that were talking about solar and also other various ways of storing energy and generating energy. And also, it was kind of a cool thing. It was kind of like right up my alley because I am a solar guy and I am also an electric car guy and a heat pump guy. And, you know, I kind of believe in all this stuff because it just makes sense. It really does. So anyway, moving on, other positive things. It's May and it's bike month. This is it. We're here. It's May. I've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks, and it is National Bike Month, as per determined by the League of American Bicycles. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along. And I'm also going to look at the contenders that will be that may be winning the Maglia Rossa in Italy this year. This month, I'm sorry, and this year, actually. Yeah, it's the Giro, man. It's the Giro. This is a big deal. We will talk about the Giro today because there's all sorts of interesting stuff going on there, and I'm real excited by the Giro. I think it's great. So anyway, that's that is going to be a really, really positive thing. And then the other thing on a positive side, I got lots of positive sides things here today. I also, on Saturday morning, just before I went to the Energy Fair, I went over to the new grammar school here in Mansfield, and I helped the folks from Bike Mansfield pull the bikes out of the trailer and check them over, because we've got all these bikes that we're with that basically we got donated to the town of Mansfield so that they can run their bike program to teach fourth graders how to ride a bike, how to work on bikes, how to ride in traffic, all the things that are super, super important. And it's a week-long program, basically, that is available to all of the fourth graders before they leave the elementary school and move on to the middle school. Fantastic idea. There aren't a lot of schools that do this sort of thing, but our town of Mansfield is doing that sort of thing. I will talk a little bit more about that also in the show. Another big question here. Did anyone do the Five Borough this past weekend? Hopefully it wasn't too damp. I haven't heard back from my friend Larry, who went, and I don't know if... actually, and Paul went too. I don't know if Larry went. Actually, Paul went, and hopefully he didn't get soaked, because we kind of had some weather this weekend. Depended where you were, kind of spotty. But anyway, I can't imagine doing the Five Borough in the rain. It's crazy enough dry, believe me. Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tip of the Week. Ah, for a dry weekend. Boy, we have been having some kind of lousy weekends here. It's spring here in New England, and you just never know what you're going to get. And so you watch the weather forecasts, you watch your weather apps, and you look at your radar, and they threaten you with doom and gloom on the weekend. And what happens? The sun comes out and it's a beautiful day. You just don't know. Once again, it really kind of depends on where you are. That's why I have found that besides reading, going on to a weather app of sorts, which we have a lot of now, I like to listen to certain forecasts on certain radio stations in the area. We have a local radio station here that seems to have a really good weather forecaster. But they get pretty close to on the mark, more so than I have seen from some of the other TV stations that are out there and all. But anyway, you can go with whatever you want to go with. I like to kind of follow this local radio station that's in Willimantic, and because they really do have a good, they've got an AM radio there. Which, remember AM radio, folks? Anyway, we're on FM, so anyway, they have an AM station, and they've got a great weather forecasting service that they use. It's always been fairly accurate, but when that doesn't work, I like to do the amateur meteorologist thing myself, in which case I will go and I will look things up. I especially like watching the weather radar. When you watch the weather radar and you also look at the direction of which the wind is coming from, the way the weather is actually moving, you can get a lot closer than you realize as to predicting whether or not you're going to get yourself stuck in a soaker or not. But I find that it's always best to take a look at the radar, because the radar really kind of shows you what's going on and what's coming in overhead. Rarely have I missed on that, but, you know, it's happened. I've got myself pretty soaked a few times because I, you know, missed the opportunity or whatever. I've also been known to, back a number of years ago, be out riding my bicycle in colder weather. And this was well before we had any of this great information. And then found myself caught in a snow squall. And let me tell you, that is not an easy thing to deal with, because when you get a snow squall, or when we used to get these things, they could drop as much as 2 inches in like 15, 20 minutes. It really comes down hard and it's really nasty. And then they come and they go, but it's definitely one of the inherent problems with riding your bicycle in certain time, at certain times of year, in certain weather around here. So you got to kind of keep your eyes open. But I find the radar is great if you're a cyclist or any kind of an outdoor person. You kind of have to become an amateur meteorologist, because otherwise you're just going to sit inside all day long and wait for that bad weather to come, and it's not going to come, and then you're going to miss the opportunity of being outside, which I think a lot of people did on Saturday, because there was a huge threat for bad weather and it really didn't happen until the end of the day. But anyway, my advice to you, Ron's Mechanical Minute and Tip of the Week, is learn how to follow the weather radar. All right, content. Let's move on here. So, checked over the bikes for the Mansfield fourth grade program is first thing on my list here. I mentioned it earlier. There's a Mansfield bicycle education program for fourth graders, community initiative for sustainable mobility and safety. And it's starting basically this year in the spring of 2025 in the Mansfield school system, and it will initiate a comprehensive bicycle education program for all of its fourth grade students. See if I've got this up here, and I probably don't, so we're gonna go find it. So anyway, this is a collaboration with Bike Mansfield, which is a local advocacy group here in the town of Mansfield. We're working on a lot of different things here. We work on road safety, and we work on talking to the transportation people in town and trying to initiate things like putting roundabouts in certain areas where they're far where they'll be more appreciated, basically. We've got a lot of traffic, especially around the University of Connecticut. It's probably our worst area as far as traffic goes, just because we have so many students that are here, and they all, for some reason, bring cars with them. Probably because, here's another rant point of Ron's, is we keep building these large what do they call them, 501s, the big apartment buildings with the, they usually have a commercial space on the first floor and then apartments up above. And we keep building these things. And every time we build one of these things, we also build these enormous parking garages to go with them. If I were king, and you'll hear me say that often, I would require only one parking space per apartment. Now, these apartments are usually 3 and 4 bedrooms, so they hold a lot of people as far as that goes. But if there were only one parking space that were available per apartment, we could cut way down on the volume of cars that we have in this area. And then we could also focus more on bicycles for commuting back and forth to university. They're not very far off the university campus, so less than a mile in many cases. Or you know, maybe even a bus service that would work really well to carry kids back and forth to school without having to populate the cars on the road the way they do now. So whenever I see one of these things go up, and there's another one about to go up, actually two more about to go up. One is going to be grad housing, and the other one is going to be basically open to students. It's right on the edge of campus once again. Once those things go up and they put these giant parking garages in, they just put way too many cars into our system and we can't really handle it. Plus, it makes it extremely dangerous for bicycles and pedestrians. So, not a big believer in it, But anyway, let's go back to the fact that we, as the town of Mansfield and also as Bike Mansfield, are now working to educate students, young students, about the benefits of cycling and what they can do to ride a bicycle in our particular neighborhood, or should they move on to another neighborhood or off to college somewhere else or whatever, they'll have some base knowledge as to how to handle themselves if they're using a bicycle for commuting with, for instance. So all good stuff, all really, really good stuff. Thanks to all of you that are listening here today, by the way. Nice to see people online with me. So anyway, we have these... We have this program, and we got a special grant from Sustainable CT, and the program is aiming to equip around 100 students each year with essential life skills for safe bicycling. Each participant also receives a helmet to ensure their safety. Drawing inspiration from a highly successful bike education program in the South Windsor school system, BikeWalk CT has tailored a specialized training curriculum and manual for physical education teachers across Connecticut. Mansfield PE instructors have already received this resourceful training all the way back in June of 2021 and are prepared to deliver an engaging and educational experience for all the students. So anyway, it looks like we were trying to get it to begin the 23-24 academic year, but, problems occur. And so therefore, we are now launching it right now. We've got all the bikes in. We have a special trailer that we store all the bikes in so that they are all kept in a row by sizes, that sort of thing, and secured on the property so we don't have to worry about taking up any of the space inside the school either. So it's just an awesome, awesome program. Big, big shout out to Lon Holkren and Bike Mansfield and all the other folks that are involved with Bike Mansfield as far as that goes. The bicycle education program is designed as a blend of classroom learning and hands-on riding sessions. Students will get to practice on bikes that will be securely stored in our 16-foot trailer. So we've got 20 and 24-inch bicycles equipped with flat bars, handbrakes, and gears. We've got 2 3-wheeled adaptive bicycles for students with special needs, 100 helmets for optimum safety, portable bicycle repair stands, and floor-type tire pumps for maintenance. I was using some of those on Saturday. And we also have a 12x12 easy-up canopy, floor tarp, folding tables, lots of stuff. So it's great. We have all the equipment we need to make this all work. And there were lots of folks within our community that helped donate money towards this sort of thing, which is very, very nice. So a big shout out to the local merchants around town and others who were really, really helpful in taking care of this. Big shout out to Storage Center Cycle, because I believe they're the ones who secured the bikes for us. And also I know that I worked with Adam on Saturday, and I think he put most of these bikes together originally. So anyway, great, great local bike shop, really, really cool stuff. And that's what we got. So I'm excited because this is going to happen at the end of May. So it's for a week, or just shy of a week, maybe 4 days. I'm not even 100% sure on that. And these kids are going to be, walked through the whole process of what bicycles are all about, how they can use them, how they can take care of them, that sort of thing. And then, of course, the most challenging part of it all is how to ride them on the streets safely and with traffic, and understanding what the traffic laws are and the rules are. It's a great, great program. I'm so excited to see this. I never thought I would see this in my town in my lifetime. So it's just a cool thing. And this is going to happen every single year. So if you are a member of the fourth grade in the town of Mansfield, you get to do this. Interesting story, little side story on this. I was on my way over to the program to help out on Saturday morning. And while I was going there, I stopped at the local post office because I had to ship a package out. And I was shipping the package out, and the gentleman at the post office said, "So what are you doing today, Ron?" And I said, "Actually, I'm heading over to," and I explained what I was doing. This woman's standing there and she's listening to me and she's going, "My granddaughter's in the fourth grade at Mansfield." I said, "Well, your granddaughter will be participating in this program because it's for all those fourth grade students." She looked at me and said, "Who do I make the check out to?" Can you believe that? She gave us a nice little check to be donated to Bike Mansfield. And it was very, very kind of her to do that sort of thing. A big, big tip of the cycling cap on that one. That's above and beyond the call of duty. Really, really nice that she was so happy to see that her granddaughter was going to, you know, learn from people who were trained to teach her how to ride the bike and take care of a bike. So cool stuff, always cool stuff. And yeah, when you see programs like this, there's always they're always in need of funding. So if you have the ability to help out on something like that, it's great. It's just really, really a good thing. So anyway, let's move on. I got a few other things that I was going to talk about this last week, and so now I'm going to bring it up now because I think it's important, and it came from Streets Blog, and it was part of our current administration and why are many states trying to ban cities from slowing down drivers. What? Ban them from slowing down drivers? You know me, I've been talking about this one for a long time. I do believe that if there is a crosswalk that you're driving through, that the speed limit should never be more than 20 miles per hour because of the stats. The stats are very simple. You know, if you hit somebody at 20 miles an hour, they probably have a good chance of living. If you hit them at 40, they're probably not. So, come on. Come on, this is no-brainer stuff. This is very, very simple. As a matter of fact, if you want to get all educational about it, it's physics, baby. You don't want to get hit by something that's going really fast, especially something very large that's going very fast. So Texas could soon become the latest state to ban its cities from reclaiming lane space from drivers. Now that little Donnie is in office, some fear that more will follow. Yeah, I refuse to refer to him in a very professional way. I'm so sorry if that offends anyone, but I'm not seeing professional things coming out of that administration right now. I'm a little freaked out by it. So Texas may become the latest state to stop its cities from reclaiming space on the street as the White House continues to suppress the benefits of road rebalancing. Some advocates fear the Lone Star State will probably not be the last. Lawmakers in Texas introduced a bill that would bar cities from prohibiting the use of certain modes of transportation on roadways that is not otherwise prohibited on that roadway or as required by state law. So, or to sift through a 10-car pileup of double negatives, make it functionally illegal for cities to create car-free spaces like bike lanes and pedestrian plazas. That was a long drawn sigh. Yeah. Why do we have to leap so far backwards before we go forward? I just don't get it. So anyway, it might be the most extreme bill I've ever seen. And that's from Joe Crutro, executive director of Bike Houston. I can't imagine local leaders in either party want state legislators to tell them what they can or can't do. Idaho, meanwhile, recently went even further by passing a pair of bills that collectively force highway districts to prioritize drivers by preventing them from narrow streets to under 50 feet wide. the width of an NBA basketball court. In the state's urban areas like Boise, transportation officials say those laws could jeopardize even basic safety projects like curb extensions to shorten the distance pedestrians need to cross monster roads. If you don't know what those are, what they do is they bump out where the crosswalks are so that it makes it less distance from one side of the road to the other. And it also is a traffic calming technique to give a visual appearance that, hey, look, if I come into this too fast, I might hit that curb and ruin my precious four-wheeled monster vehicle. Anyway, this is going against everything, and I mean everything, that I advocate on this show and all my friends that are out there that do the same thing and have done all this great work. It's now starting to get dismantled by the current administration. Why? Because the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry, dictates pretty much what happens right now. It's very sad. There's an awful lot of money involved here. And there's an awful lot of power, a lot of lobbying that goes on, and we're missing the entire point here. It's just really frightening to me. So it's not just in Texas and Idaho. Last year, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill which he said would prevent localities from agenda-motivating lane reductions to force people out of their cars by increasing public notice and meeting requirements when cities want to repurpose lane space for anything other that drivers. So that bill actually stopped short of banning road diets outright. Indiana, meanwhile, tried to pass a 2024 bill specifically banning construction of designated bus lanes in its capital city for a single year, though the bill was ultimately killed when transit agency agreed to leave more space for motorists in the BRT region that was a clear target for the legislation. So this is like crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. And now that Donnie is back in office, though some fear those sorts of state preemptive bills might face far easier path to passage. And with that misinformation about road diets and road pricing already proliferating at breakneck speed. You know, the road diet works. It works really well. More cars can travel through when you exercise road diets. Traffic lights are deadly. Traffic circles or roundabouts are not. Traffic circles or roundabouts move 33% more cars than traffic lights do. So, where does this not make sense? Please. Also, so you know, when there is a traffic circle and you are on a bicycle, you can get through it much safer than you can an intersection. The primary reason why traffic lights are so dangerous is because people don't stop at red lights. They speed through red lights. And when they do, and someone is doing the right thing and waiting for the light to turn green in the opposite direction, they get hit, and then you know the rest of the story. Head-on collisions are deadly. Side impact collisions are deadly. And so the whole idea of the traffic light intersections just does not make a lot of sense. And when you put a roundabout in, the traffic is automatically brought down to, just because it's impossible to go through it fast, down to like 20 miles an hour. 20 miles an hour, didn't I talk about this earlier, that I would like to see 20 miles an hour wherever there's a crosswalk? This is important stuff. And it's really important for people who are vulnerable users, which would be pedestrians and cyclists. So anyway, this is a big problem, and it really it's not going to get resolved right away, for sure, unless for some reason somebody comes to their senses on this. We lost a great transportation secretary in the last administration, and we have a not so great transportation secretary right now in the United States. Unfortunately, you know, the lobbying and the money that is involved behind fossil fuels and also the automobile industry is very, very, very destructive and a real problem as far as that goes. So anyway, we will move on to something a little happier after this, but this is, it's just really annoying to me. It drives me nuts. So let's go on to another one of my complaints about what's going on here in this country right now. Hi, Canada. We love you. Anyway, we may be moving there soon at this point. So People for Bikes, which is a great organization, they're preparing a letter to the current administration asking for tariff relief. Right? Remember, because we talk about this whole tariff thing, and now there are all these tariffs that have been put out. It's just, you know, it's idle threats, because most of them have been drawn back on only because there's so much pressure that happens when the tariffs go on from people that are losing money in their businesses in this country that they pull it back. Unfortunately, the bicycle industry does not have the same kind of lobbying power that, let's say, someone like the automobile industry has. And so it's a tough call here. But People for Bikes is preparing a letter to the current president asking for tariff relief on behalf of its 340 U.S. coalition members of manufacturers, suppliers, and distributors. Signed by 33 members and addressed to the president, People for Bikes request reinstating the tariff exclusion process for bicycles, components, apparel, helmets, and related accessories. The current tariffs on complete bicycles and components used for assembly imported from countries around the globe will have devastating impacts on the industry if they're not adjusted near term. And we are hearing concerns around additional layoffs, the risk of more companies losing their operations, including some of our few remaining domestic manufacturers. Furthermore, the letter expresses pressures faced by small and mid-sized bike companies, especially ones assembling in the U.S., who rely on imported components and are now contending with higher steel and aluminum prices. Concerns are also addressed about tariffs on helmets, calling them counterproductive for consumer safety, and warned that apparel brands without a viable domestic textile option are being pushed towards insolvency. We appreciate your focus on China's competitive threat and are especially thankful for your, I can't even say I'm thankful for his leadership. I'm going to pass on that. They're just being very kind. I think that's the way you get to him. You make him feel like he's important, and therefore he then pays attention to you. But the bicycle industry has enriched American lives for more than a century, said People for Bikes President and CEO Jen Dice in a statement announcing the letter. We urge the administration to give our businesses the runway they need to compete globally, invest domestically, and keep biking safe, affordable, and accessible for everyone. People for Bikes asks if any brand is interested in signing in on the support letter to email the group's Vice President of Government Relations, Dr. Ash Lovell. So, yay, People for Bikes. Yay, yay, yay. Good for them. Will it work? No idea. I have no idea if that'll work or not. It's, these are hard times. That's all I can say. And the fact that they are not, or this administration, I shall say, is not paying attention to the fact that bicycles are really transportation, and they just want to ignore that. And it's really maddening to me, because every good step forward that we had the previous 4 years, we had lots of good things happening with infrastructure and transportation. We were heading in the right direction. Finally, we were heading in the right direction. And now it is being erased by selfish, greedy people, and who just don't want to see us out there on our bicycles. Makes me a little annoyed, I can say. Maybe a little more than annoyed, but anyway. Let's move forward here. Let's go to something more in a happier place. We got a few happier things to talk about here. So, first of all, the big one is the Giro d'Italia. Yeah, it starts this weekend coming up. Yay, big thing. I love the Giro. The Giro is, of all the classic races, I do love the Giro the most. Maybe it's because I'm half Italian. Maybe my grandfather came from Italy. You know, I don't know. Who knows what it is? But I've always had a really, really fond liking for this particular race. This particular race is early season. So, yeah, I know it's May, but it's still early season. And so, therefore, sometimes we can have interesting weather profiles that happen during the Giro, especially when they go over big mountain passes. And it can get kind of ugly. And I've seen some pretty snowy scenes and on some of the stages for the Giro. Oftentimes you will see them going through places that have the roads have been cleared, but they're still very wet because of all the melt coming off of the snow on the sides of the road. It's the Giro tended to be, over the years, it tended to be the one that had the steepest of the climbs. Giro and the Vuelta both had really incredibly steep climbs. Tour de France tended to be a little bit more mellow as far as that went, but the Giro was always kind of classic as far as that went. And it's early season, so being early season, we have riders that are just coming into shape and condition, so there's that going on. Although from what we're watching with the classics this year, it's been fairly amazing as to the condition of some of these riders. This race will not have Tadej Pogačar in it. He is not riding in the Giro this year. He is saving it for the Tour de France, so we won't see him there. But it will have riders like Primož Roglič and Juan Augusto and Derek Guy. And so there are going to be some hot riders there for sure. Definitely very, very hot riders. So it returns on May 9th, and that stage is set for a dramatic battle across Italy's toughest terrain. I've got a whole profile that I have in front of me here, and I can kind of go over that if I have time. But the first stage has actually got a pretty good couple of climbs in it. So it actually, this is the 108th edition of the Grand Tour, and it begins with three stages in Albania, marking a unique start abroad before the Peloton returns to the Italian mainland. So you can, there are a few different ways of watching it. It may require a subscription to a particular site in which to do that. I do have that. So if anyone out there is listening and is local and you want to watch the Giro with me, come on over and we can watch it right here. But there will be some interesting people on the start line. Five former winners will be on the start line, like Nairo Quintana, Richard Carapaz, Egan Bernal, Jai Hindley, and defending champion Primož Roglič, who recently crushed Juan Ayuso in the final stage of the Volta a Catalunya. And so that's another one of those early classics. Primoz enters the 2025 Giro with the most decorated Grand Tour rider in the field. Four-time Vuelta in España champion, Rogelik also claimed the 2023 Giro with a legendary late march or late charge that overturned Geraint Thomas. Though not the reigning champion, his pedigree and recent win at the Vuelta, the Volta a Catalunya, make him the man to beat in Italy. The Slovenian headlines a stacked Red Bull Bora team that also features Hindley and 2024 Giro runner-up Daniel Martinez. But anyway, you know, he's going to have some contenders there. UAE Emirates is bringing Juan Ayuso, who is very talented. Adam Yates, Visma Lisa bike counters with Simon Yates. The Yates brothers are on two different teams. That's kind of cool. And Richard Carapaz leads EF Education Easy Post, while Mikel Landa rides for the Sodal Quickstep team. So all eyes in Canada are on Derek Gee after his breakout performance in the 2023 Giro, where he earned four second-place stage finishes and won the Combative Award. Gee went on to finish ninth overall in the 2023 Tour de France. This season, he's getting even better, winning overall at O Gran Camino, and placing third at the Tour of the Alps. The Israel Premier Tech rider now enters the Giro as a legitimate general classification contender. So, who do we watch out for? Climbers and stage hunters to watch. The GC fight will also include young talents like Antonio Tiberi, best young rider from 2024, Romain Bardet riding his final Giro. Wow, he's still riding. That's amazing. David Godot and Giulio Ciccone, other mountain men to watch. Damiano Caruso, Thiamin Arsman, Aymer Rubio, and Max Poole. So Wout van Aert, Tom Pidcock, and Mark Hirschi make their Giro debuts and will target hilly stages and breakaways, while Mads Pedersen and Olav Kuge are set for sprint battles. So we're going to have some interesting things going on. There's time trials where we will see some interesting riders like Eduardo Affini, Joshua Tarling, Brandon McNulty, here from the United States, Maria Catinho, and Jay Vine, and Don Hull will also shine in the TT events. So it's going to be an interesting ride. There's definitely some interesting people that are showing up to it. It seems a little, I'm trying to think here what to say. You know, like we're not seeing really the Tour de France riders as much, but then again, how many Grand Tours can you win? How many Grand Tours can you be competitive with? It's very, very hard for you to be able to pull off one or more of these. So we'll just have to see what happens. We'll have to see who shows up and what it looks like when they get there. It should be very, very interesting. The other thing that we have here, so I've got a breakdown of some of the stages here, and there's great profiles here. I'm going to try to share this because it's a great breakdown stage by stage of all the actual profiles, the hill profiles and all. And if you take a look at the first one here, which is, let's see here, how long is this one? 160 kilometers long, so it's a pretty long race. It's got, I see a pretty major Category 2 in here, and it looks like it is And it looks pretty tough in general, because it's they start out really flat and fast, and then there's this huge hill that goes for quite some time. So it's going to be interesting. And then after they get over that, there's a couple little, we'll call them bumps to the finish. They're both category threes, so they're definitely difficult climbs. And that will be the first stage. So the first stage is certainly got some interest to it, and we shall see what happens with that. Starting it in Albania is interesting, because it gives us a little bit different road profile as far as that goes. And then we go on to, then the second stage is individual time trial. So it's very flat, and that's kind of nice, because they'll need a break after that first stage. And the third stage, once again, we go right back at it again. There's a huge category two in there. It's closer to the end, and it's very rolly and choppy before that. So there's going to be a lot to offer for the riders there too. So that should be very interesting. Stage four kind of settles out, kind of drops down and settles out for a while, and yet I'm sure we're going to see some fast sprinting there. Stage five, again, just jagged, nasty climbs, Cat fours, big time steep climbs. I just it looks really interesting. And again, I'm going to actually copy this right now, and I will post it over on my Facebook page for Bicycle Talk, and you guys can take a look at it and see what you think, because these stage profiles are kind of insane. So there are definitely some things here to watch out for, tons and tons of it. And then let's see here, where did I put it here? I think I had actually had some other stuff in here too, but anyway, I think it's going to be very exciting. I'm always looking forward to, you know, what to look for, and the contenders and stage and all the different things that we have here to offer. Should be a great race again this year. And see if we can pull that up there. I know I had some more info in here. So the stage 16 is going to be one of the ones to watch at San Valentino, to Brentonocio. And stage 20 is also going to be another one to watch. Stage 19, these are the top difficulty stages that are out there. Stage 17, it looks like this race is going to get really tough from stage 16 on. There's going to be some really difficult climbs in there. There are some other big ones in there, like stage 7 has some solid work in climbing into that one. Stage 11 also, even stage 3 and stage 8 have definitely some difficulty to them. So we're going to see a lot of fun racing here. I can't wait. It should be really good. And it's 21 stages, and anything goes, right? It's bike racing. So it should be a lot of fun to watch. We're going to be watching it over the next 3 weeks. We'll be talking about it here on Bicycle Talk over the next 3 weeks also, because it's a big newsworthy thing here. So anyway, I hope you continue to join me for that. And let's move on from the Giro, because we'll have plenty of time to talk about that in the future. And I am going to switch gears over to National Bike Month, which is this month of May is National Bike Month. It's promoted by the League of American Bicyclists, and it's celebrated in communities from coast to coast. Established in 1956, National Bike Month is a chance to showcase the many benefits of bicycling and encourage more folks to giving biking a try. In 2025, we're celebrating all the ways and days people bike during National Bike Month. There are so many days to celebrate National Bike Month, with either a commute during Bike to Work Week, Or Bike to Work Day, which will be the third Friday in the third week in May is Bike to Work Week, and then the Friday is National Bike to Work Day. A lot of state capitals will be having celebrations at their state capital. I know we do it here in Connecticut every year. I've often led a contingent of people into the state capital. Won't be doing that this year due to various reasons. But I did one year, I did actually ride my entire, when I was a sales rep in the bicycle industry, I brought my laptop computer with me and my bicycle and a couple of friends who were brave enough to join me for it. And we rode into Hartford and we did the celebration early in the morning. Yes, we did have to leave in the dark in order to get there on time. But we got there for the celebration at the old State House. And then I went on to call on bicycle dealers that I normally call on in that general area in the Hartford region. We went to Hartford, we went to Rocky Hill, we went to Newington, we crossed back over the river. That was an adventure because the ferry wasn't operating one year. That was a bit of a problem. And then we were in Glastonbury and Manchester and Vernon. We, you know, stopped at a lot of different shops along the way. Stopped in a shop in Tallinn. Stopped in, I went in the back door in stores right up here, up the street from me. And I caught them because they were still working. But I don't think the door was still open by the time I got there. I put in like over 100 miles that day, and I had a Hartford Current reporter, good old Lori Riley, who actually rode with me part of the way and also did a great article on it too. So that was kind of fun because, you know, she was kind of, what's your excuse? This guy just rode 100 miles to do Bike to Work Day. So it's kind of a fun thing, you know, little shout out there, kind of fun. So you could do that too, you know, or you don't have to ride the whole way. The other thing is, and I encourage this, not just for Bike to Work Week, but in other times too. If you can just drive your car part way and then ride your bike back and forth the other way, the beauty of that is that as you get closer and closer, especially if you live in a heavily populated area and heavily traveled area, if you could ride your bike in during the heaviest part of the commute, you can usually ride faster than getting stuck in traffic. Because getting stuck in traffic, obviously, is not going to get you to go forward at all. Whereas if you're on your bicycle, you can continue to go forward, especially if there's alternative streets you can use and or bike paths that might be available to you that you could use. It's just so much more satisfying than sitting behind the wheel of a car and the windshield of a car and being frustrated because there was an accident up ahead and everyone's come to a stop. And now you're looking at your watch and you're going, how am I going to get to work on time? You know, this is a real problem. And yet if you're on your bike, you just kind of bypass all that, which is kind of cool. And once you get the feel for it and you start getting comfortable with it, it really is a much more enjoyable way to go to work. And then when you go to leave at night, and this is the classic, you go to leave and everyone is trying to jam out onto the roads all at the same time, you run into the same bottleneck, the same problem with traffic, and everybody's all jammed up. And there you are stuck in traffic, or if you're on your bicycle, you just work your way around all that. So it's a great thing to do. We'll talk a little more about it as we get involved more into Bike Month. There's lots of cool stuff going on. There's lots of celebration. We also, speaking of which, we will also have our annual Ride of Silence, and that is coming up on May 21st, 7 p.m. worldwide, but we also have our own branch of it right here in stores, at the town hall and Community Center parking lot, which is also right next to E.O. Smith High School parking lot, for overflow traffic, as if you're coming in from out of town, you want to participate in this. UConn Police Department is going to be escorting us on a 3-mile journey around campus and right down the middle of Route 195, a busy state road, and we will stop traffic, and we will prove our point that bicycles belong out there, and it is a ride of silence. We have a little speech before we leave, and then after that, we just ride quietly and peacefully and do our little protest. So that is coming up. That's really, really soon. Big shout out to Kevin Mahan for helping with this. He's been the guy who really has put the energy behind this. On May 31st, the Best Buddies Boston to Hyannisport ride is happening. It's a 100-mile ride, a 55-mile, and a 20-mile ride for the Best Buddies organization. And it's just really fun. This year, last year, Alberto Contador came, and he rode in it. And this year, it's going to be Mark Cavendish. Yes, Sir Mark Cavendish will be starting the Best Buddies ride this year. That's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, finishing points. How about those tariffs? Kind of silly, aren't they? Yeah, I do believe that bicycling should be exempt and the bicycle industry should be exempt from this insanity. Yo, Donnie, ride a bike. Maybe you'll get it. Oh, then you'd have to ride a bike. That's right. Anyway, this little clip from our friends at the League of American Bicycles. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making biking easier and safer option for more people, because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and do your part. Show up to a town meeting. Make a stance. Let's do it. Come to the Ride of Silence. That's your own little piece of advocacy that you can do. And hey, take the Pedal and Ride Challenge. Consider parking your car for one day, just one day, and ride your bike instead. And if you do that, I want you to, you'll really understand how things work. So you might just surprise yourself. And remember, whether riding your bike or driving a car, please be safe and be kind to one another. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below. And if you're listening to this on the radio or on a podcast, you can simply drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks so much for listening. Get on your